Fun fact, Connecticut is spelled with 3 C's. So it's Connecticut. And it should really be pronounced Connecticut, but it's not. Ain't that fun?
Did we just make that up? Imagine pronouncing it Connecticut.
Connecticut. That's how it should be, says me.
That's our fun fact, is that we just made this up.
But it's actually true. That's how it's spelled.
Exactly.
And it makes zero sense. America, explain!
English, explain!
Hi! I'm Tammy.
I'm Leanne.
And you're listening to Incrimination.
Whee!
Burr, 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 burr.
All right, well, we don't have a lot to go over today before we jump into the episode, unless you have anything.
Oh,
yeah.
I booked my Pfizer vaccine.
Yay!
I don't know how I was allowed to get it, because I'm not in the age range, I don't think.
Yeah.
But my parents just got theirs today, and they asked the pharmacist, like, hey, can I book an appointment for my son and daughter? And they're like, yeah. How old are they? And they're like, you know, my brother's 19, I'm 24. And they're like, yeah, sure.
I think they might be doing pre-bookings, because we're getting a huge shipment of Pfizer vaccines in the next couple of weeks. So they're doing vaccinations for teachers right now, but I think it opens up to the general public in probably like a week. So maybe that's why. So
cool.
That's awesome though. You're getting the elite brand of the vaccine. It's so funny seeing people like talk about the different brands, and everyone's like so sketched out by AstraZeneca, but then there's a bunch of like Gen X who are like, fuck it, just shoot me up. Like, Twitter is such like a wild west of a place for people getting vaccinated. It's so funny. Very interesting, but that's awesome. That is exciting. And for anyone listening, go get vaccinated when you can, when you're eligible. I literally have vaccine envy for people in the States, because I keep seeing people like going out or whatever. I'm like, fuck.
I don't know if you have like I've been using, because in the for the past month of April, Tinder had Tinder Passport, and so you could go anywhere in the world and like match with people in like different countries, and like people in the States and Australia were putting like vaccinated check on like their bios, so that, you know, you can hang out with them, they're safe.
I know.
I thought that was cool.
I know.
We have nothing like that here.
I know, not yet. It's coming. People are getting vaccinated.
Alberta especially is a sad place.
I know. It's actually kind of scary right now, but
yeah, whatever. Our rates are crazy.
Yeah. I've like...
Stay safe out there, everyone.
Yeah. But yeah, in other news, the super unrelated to the podcast at all, but thought it was relevant to my life, the Oilers made the playoffs, and I thought I would bring it up.
Huzzah.
Just because like... Because I was listening to a Necronomipod episode on my walk this morning, and Mike was apparently, he was walking over to, I think Ian's house or Dave's house, I don't know, walking over to Dave's house in an Oilers shirt, and it's like bright orange, and I have like a similar shirt that's just bright orange that I wear for like my pajamas.
I know the one.
Yeah, you've seen it. And then, but it was just funny, he was like, yeah, I was on my way because I live like blocks away, so I just... was walking over to his house to record, and Ian drives right past me, and I just, it was funny. I was like, wow, they just talk about the Oilers almost every episode, and it makes me so happy. Like, they live in a completely different country, but they still support my team, so.
Is it all of them that support your team, or I thought it was just Mike?
I think it's just Mike, but they're all just, I don't think any of the other ones really, like, they don't seem like they watch a lot of hockey. They seem more like football fans, so, which I don't watch, but, yeah. Love my team.
It's so interesting how, like, me and you have very, like, different interests, but we bond over this one weird thing.
Yeah, this is a very, like, niche thing, too. Oh, my God. Yeah. In other news, I might just cut this out, but, like, I'm watching Criminal Minds, and it's so good.
Oh, yay! Finally!
So good!
Now we can talk about Criminal Minds together.
Oh, my God. I've been binge-watching, because I can, like, I put it on my phone, and I have, like, a phone stand in front of me. And I'll just be like,
no spoilers. How far are you in?
I literally don't know, because I've just been binging. I'm still in season one though. So I have a long way to go. And the thing is, I'm watching it on Disney Plus, and Disney Plus doesn't have like a 2x speed option. So I have to watch it at normal speed, which is like, okay, fine, whatever.
It's weird that you watch shows that you're supposed to enjoy at 2x speed.
You know, anyway. I listen to all my podcasts at 2x now because like you just get through more of them. I am all about productivity, apparently.
You need to like relax, girl.
But I like at this point I've gotten so used to it that like anything at a normal speed to me, except for Criminal Minds, because I think like I actually really enjoy the show. But for my lectures,
and also they talk kind of fast.
Yeah, they do. Criminal Minds. Yeah. Anyways, so today we're going to talk about sort of a continuation of the Milkshake Murders. It's not directly related to our general theme of like Asian podcasts or anything like that, but I thought it was interesting to tell the story of Andrew Kissel, which is where we left off last time. So I'll just give a brief recap of what we talked about last episode. So last episode, we talked about the Milkshake Murder involving Nancy Kissel and her husband, Robert Kissel, who was a wealthy and successful investment banker at Merrill Lynch, which is just a very big bank, basically across the world. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, you might want to like hop out of this one and then hop back in once you finish it. But basically, spoiler alert, Robert Kissel was murdered by his wife through a heavily drugged strawberry milkshake. There was a bit of speculation around the motive. She said it was out of defense, self-defense, due to an abusive relationship, while the prosecutors argued that she did it because she was having an affair with a TV repairman in Vermont, and she was basically hoping to cash in on the life insurance that her husband had. She went through a lengthy trial and a set of appeals throughout the years, but last we heard, she was serving out a life sentence in Hong Kong. They had three children together, so Nancy and Robert had three children together. They were staying with their aunt and uncle, Andrew Kissel and Haley Wolf Kissel. And so today I'll be talking a little bit more about Andrew Kissel, who was Robert's older brother. And my main sources today were basically from a New York Times article, New York Magazine article, and I'll link that one for sure in our show notes. That one was really good. It's a bit long, but it like goes through a very thorough story of like everything, and it sort of ties the timeline of the two separate cases, almost the two cases together, and I definitely recommend reading it. It was really good. They also do like a quick interview with their dad that I'll sort of mention throughout this episode today, but if you have the time, go and read that. We will start with the background of the Kissel family. Robert, Andrew, and Jane, if you remember from the last episode, she was the sister of the family who eventually got custody of the kids of Robert and Nancy. They all grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey in an upper to middle class family. Their father, Bill Kissel, was sort of that self-made American man who actually ended up running a successful business that made toner for photocopiers, and this company was called Sinfax. So because of the success of the business, they were able to kind of move into a wealthier house, or like a nicer house with like a bunch of like space, and sort of portraying that image of being more well off than other families. And in the I forgot to mention, in the Dateline episode, Robert's high school sweetheart actually was interviewed by them, and she talked a lot about what it was like to know both of the brothers while they were younger. And essentially what she explained was that Andrew and Robert and their entire family in general, they really enjoyed going skiing, and Robert and Andrew were understandably quite competitive with each other, as brothers will be, because, you know, you just want to beat each other and be better than the other brother.
Oh, yes.
And according to her, things in life seemed to come a bit easier for Robert. So in terms of school and like athletic ability and things like that, he just picked things up really easily. He was very outgoing, so he was able to get along with people very well as well. On the flip side, Andrew had a harder time with things. He had to try a bit harder, and sometimes he'd end up just finding shortcuts to doing things. And this is sort of like a little bit of a foreshadow to the rest of the case, because he wanted to be as good as his brother, and maybe he also just wanted to prove himself to his dad, and sometimes he didn't have as much of a natural ability to get there as Robert did. And so in the New York Magazine interview, Bill Kissel, their dad, is quoted saying that Robert, so the one who was murdered by this milkshake, Robert is a man I would have liked to have been. About Andrew, he said that he was also very successful, very bright, and very creative, but then added that Andrew seemed like he was always in a hurry. He recalls a memory of giving both of them credit cards and going on a trip to Sears, during which Robert bought a pair of cheap shoes while Andrew bought a fur jacket. So this kind of theme carries over into his future, like into his adulthood as well, because Andrew just seemed to be more materialistic and focused on showing off of his wealth and his status. Like, Rob just got a pair of shoes and Andrew's like, nah, I'm gonna go for the fur jacket. Like, I want to look bougie as fuck, apparently.
Okie dokie.
Whatever floats your boat. And going into his adulthood, while his brother Robert was having a successful life in the investment banking world, Andrew was also having a seemingly successful life on the outside. Like, if you look at it in on the outside, he looked pretty successful. He was a real estate developer, which can become quite lucrative when you're in that space, because you're basically buying land or old properties and transforming them into residential, commercial, or industrial buildings. And most of your revenue, a lot of the times, like, even though there's a huge upfront cost to developing land, obviously, you kind of get all of that back through, like, future revenue streams through rent and leasing and things like that. And on a slight aside, when they were kids, they would play Monopoly, and Robert would be the banker, and Andrew would be the real estate developer, which is literally exactly what they ended up doing in real life. Maybe that's this so is funny. Just, like, a story that people like to tell, and, like, it sometimes is, like, confirmation bias, and you, like, end up making up stories in your head, but
yeah.
It's so funny, like, hey, let us just do exactly what we did when we were playing Monopoly. Andrew ended up marrying Haley Wolf, who was actually a world-renowned skier, who then became an analyst at Merrill Lynch, which is literally the same company that Robert Kissel was working at. Haley was actually their sister Jane's ski coach, which is how they met, because Jane introduced the two of them. And they got married in 1992. They moved into a $295,000 co-op apartment. So I wasn't really sure, like, how this works. I think the co-op part of it in general just means there's sort of like a board that governs how the apartment spends their expenses and things like that. And, like, there's more people involved in the decision making for the apartment complex as a whole, rather than just, like, having one person who, like, owns the whole thing. It was, like, literally the first time that I've ever heard of a concept like this, but, like,
I'm sure it exists, but.
Haley herself came from a wealthy background, as her dad was a CEO of a $500 million engineering consulting firm, which is a ton of money. And her uncle was, like, an executive at Warner Brothers, too. So she came from a lucrative background. They kind of met, and they both had, like, obviously, like, a lot of wealth and a lot of outward success in a way. Andrew ended up starting his own company called Hanrock, which actually, if you think about it, the first four letters coincide with the first letters of the names Haley, Andrew, Nancy, and Robert. So that's him and his wife, and then also his brother and his wife. And eventually, Robert actually even chipped in $500,000 to help him out. It's so wild to me. I'm just, like, throwing out these numbers. It's just, like, these huge-ass fucking amounts. Like, it's nothing. Because they're just like, yeah, chill. We got money to spend.
Here's some money.
Like, let me just help you out here, little bro. Or big
bro. It's crazy to think, like, these people, like, there's people like that in real life right now who just have that kind of money to spend on each other. And, like,
It's crazy. Wow. I'm like, 500,000, I don't, like, if I get something from my brother, it's, like, $100, like.
My brother gets me, like, a fucking bun from TNT and calls it a day.
You know what? That's all, it's a thought that counts, right? But this man's out here just giving $500,000. Love it. On the outside, he was notorious for living a very extravagant and luxurious life, if you couldn't already tell. He would invest in Broadway plays, or not Broadway plays, but, like, plays in general, like very
interesting
famous plays, just kind of like investing and giving them the funds to be able to put on their productions.
That's awesome. Invest in the arts.
Yeah. He invested in horses.
Okay.
And rodeo. And he also invested in olive oil. I don't know why. I like olive oil, but that's also really random.
All right.
Seems like a rich person thing.
That does sound like a rich person thing.
He spent so much money, and he would constantly be treating people to nights out of drinking, essentially. And people said that he got a yacht that was $3.6 million. So not a super yacht, just a yacht.
A regular ass. Just a regular ass. He's not like Malaysian president level yet.
No,
was that Malaysia?
No. I think so. He also got jet skis and also was sort of a car collector. He had about 30 cars that he would just drive. So like imagine the amount of wealth.
One car.
Yeah. A $3.6 million yacht, jet skis, and 30 cars. Like that's fucking insane. 30
cars is, that's excessive.
It is. After the death of Robert, Andrew basically headed into a tailspin of spending money. He would spend around $50,000 every night, each night, just in one night. Dude, if I spend like $50 in a night, I'm like, cool, that's great. He was spending $50,000 a night and basically was just hemorrhaging his money. And this sort of started getting people to like wonder where all of his money was coming from. And again, he was already starting to be investigated for fraud, which I mentioned in the last episode.
Right.
And so essentially, given the high costs involved in real estate development, it involves a lot of loans and mortgages that you have to take out. Before they moved to Greenwich, Connecticut, Andrew was living in New York City, where he had actually started his own real estate development company, and he also bought the two apartments and became the Co-op Apartments building treasurer. So he was living there. He also like kind of had a stake in it as well.
Interesting.
And he became the building's treasurer, which meant that he had control over basically all of the funds.
Mm-hmm.
This was all of the receipts, all the invoices, all the bills. And for some reason, they also were like, hey, you can have sole signing authority, which we know is a terrible, terrible, terrible idea, regardless of like how much you trust a person. That's still a shitty idea, right? Right. Co-op apartments have a board, and these boards were made up of people who volunteered, and they usually came from different backgrounds. And so whenever someone came in with financial knowledge and a background in like banking and things like that, they were just relieved to have someone take on the role. Because if you don't really like thinking about finances, you're like, if someone comes in, they're like, I'm experienced, I got this, you're like, fucking thank God, like I'll just give it to you, you do it, take care of it. And so they didn't really think too much of it at first when he had become the treasurer, because they were like, they just didn't want to worry about it. It wasn't their headache.
Mm-hmm.
But then people began to get more suspicious because they noticed that Andrew was spending like a ton of money to remodel the apartments. He would spend like $2 million just like getting new floors. And they were like, what the fuck?
To remodel?
Yeah. He was spending like,
just buy a new house,
like,
bro.
A ton of money. Yeah. So everyone was just like, the fuck? And unfortunately, this actually led to the board approving an increase in the residence maintenance cost. So at the time, that cost jumped at about 20%, which I don't know how much that is in like an absolute amount, but like a 20% increase is still quite a bit if you're like already paying like $2,000, I don't know, renting.
Uh-huh.
So he was soon caught for making up basically fake companies or contractors for these remodeling projects and then transferring all of that money back to himself. So he was like, these are like the companies that are going to be helping us remodel, but he would actually only be paying like the people who are doing the remodeling work, and there's like some fake ass name and account that he would be transferring the money to, and then that would eventually go back to himself. When they caught him, so the co-op board and all of that, they were like, hang on a second. And they ended up catching him. He literally ran away.
Okay.
He just like There was a quote from the guy who was, like, part of the co-op, and he was like, yeah, he literally just ran down the stairs and out of the building when they got him.
Wait, but did they, like, show up and try to, like, get him, or?
I think they just showed up to have a conversation with him because, like, they didn't have police or anything. They were like, yo, bro, what the fuck, right?
And he just yeeted on out of there. Like.
Yeah. He was like, oh, oop, I got caught. Goodbye.
Cue the Scooby-Doo chase scene.
Yeah. So I think they eventually, like, got back in contact with him. And they agreed on, you know, dropping, like, not charging him with anything as long as he would pay them back for what he owed. And he owed them $4.7 million
back.
That's
a lot of money.
So it's like, if you're going to start a scam and you're going to start, like, defrauding anyone, usually you don't stop. Like, it's really hard to stop. And I'm quoting this from, like, Fraudsters, which is a podcast I've been listening to. They literally just do a bunch of cases on people who commit fraud around the world, and it's actually super interesting, and it's really funny. I think one of them is a comedian, like one of the hosts. Uh-huh. So, like, sometimes I'll just be, like, on my walks in my neighborhood, and I'll just crack up, like, literally by myself, and I'm like, fuck, I look crazy. And
actually, like, at work, they're making me do, like, SOX training, and, like yeah, the Sarbanes-Oxley or whatever, and, like, I'm learning all about, like, fraud risk and all of that stuff. Yeah. It's a pain in the ass, but damn, there's a lot of, like, horrible case studies, like, Hertz, Enron, and all those companies that have had, like, huge, huge scandals.
Fraudsters covers Enron, too. It's really interesting.
I never heard about
the
Enron.
Whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, like, it's insane. I was like, holy fuck, they literally just kept going down the hole of, like, fraud, and then it just never stopped.
Yeah. There's, like, a really good documentary that my coworker recommended me. It's out there somewhere. Find it. Watch it. It's good, apparently. I haven't seen it, but...
Yes.
That case is fucking nutty, dude.
It's crazy. It's probably also half the reason why there are, like, so many controls in place, too. Because, like, there was 100%. A lot to learn that from was, that
like,
case.
That was, like, the start the of case. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act. SOX.
Yeah. SOX Act?
SOX Act.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would make sense. Because that was a great old shit show. To pay them back, to pay, like, the $4.7 million back, he moved to Greenwich, Connecticut in February of 2003 and started off another scam. Woohoo! We love fraud. essentially, Greenwich is one of the wealthiest areas in Connecticut in terms of their property value. Mm-hmm. So this was basically an opportunity for him since he worked in the real estate industry. Right. And he basically looked at that and was like, ooh, dollar signs. While living there, him and Haley, his wife, they rented a property that costed $14,000 a month. Because, we got money. I'm looking at, like, renting apartments in Vancouver. And, like, even when I see $1,400, I'm like, fuck.
I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, that's a lot of money.
It's a ton of money. Later on, when he started taking care of Robert's kids after the murder of, like, Robert in Hong Kong, he began billing everything to Rob's estate, and he racked up $171,000.
How? Because
apparently, it costed him, like, $8,000 a day to take care of the kids. $8,000 a day. And I was like, there are three kids. What the fuck are you doing?
What are you feeding them? Those kids are eating fucking,
like
the foie gras with dipped in
private
gold.
Executive chef. Jesus.
I can't think of any other rich people food. That's not like my forte.
Yeah, no.
The baby eats a lobster for breakfast.
I feel like a baby would choke on lobster. Unless you chopped it up. A pureed lobster. Ew. Wow. Oh god.
Okay.
But essentially Andrew just kept on defrauding people, like, each and every way that he went. And in total, while he was living in Greenwich, he racked up around $25 million of fraud. So this is basically five times of what he owed back to the co-op. But he, you know, once you get started with fraud and you see how much money you're getting from it, and you're also not getting caught for it immediately, I think, and given his living style, it's, like, harder to give up that living style once you're used to it too. not that I'm making excuses for him. This guy was like, he just, again, he was taking shortcuts like he did since he was younger. How he did this was he would defraud the banks that he was getting his mortgages from, and he would fake the signatures of bank officials on mortgage releases. And I guess back then, they couldn't, like, they didn't have the technology or they didn't have the process and controls in place to prevent it. Because I feel like a signature fraud is pretty easy to spot in general, unless you're like a master, I don't know, like signature copier person, whatever.
I feel like signatures are really easy to forge, no?
It can be. I remember in like grade three, we learned about how you can tell because like each person has a different weighting
to
their signatures and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there's also like way more controls nowadays for getting like a mortgage and whatnot. Obviously, maybe. I could be wrong. Maybe it's super easy.
I feel like it isn't.
Maybe that's like, where people are committing fraud.
Especially with, like, technology and stuff. Can't you just, like, photocopy a signature?
Now you can, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, they might have more controls on it on the electronic side where it's not just, like, a signature only.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need more things. But basically what he was doing is that, so, like, when you have a mortgage, you're paying it off over, like, however long, like, 20, 30 years.
Right.
For a house, whatever. What he would do is he would get a mortgage. He would fake, like, a signature on the release form saying that he had paid it off and then just pocket the money.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he just made a bunch of money off of that. And then some clever lady, I don't remember her name right now, but I'll try to put it. It's in the documentary, like, on the Dateline episode.
Okay.
But she started looking at, like, the different, like, because those bankers would still have to sign other forms, right? Like, for people who aren't trying to defraud the bank. Mm-hmm. And she was comparing the signatures, and she was like, the fuck? This looks
a
little bit suspicious. Yeah. So she was actually the one who brought it forward, and that was what kicked off the investigation into Andrew and all of, like, the fraud that he was committing.
Nice.
And he had literally no boundaries to who he would rip off and what he'd do just to earn more money.
Uh-huh.
He ripped off his dead brother's estate, his brother-in-law, his friends. And not only did he, like, cheat on his wife, Haley, with other women, he also forged her signature for their ski house so that he could earn some more money off of that.
And they're the ones that are keeping the kids, yes?
Yeah. And so this is, like, all the turmoil. Like, you know, the kids are, like, their mom just murdered their dad.
Yeah.
And then now they're in this family where, like, Andrew's fucking wild, right? And Haley's the one that's trying to take care of, like, five kids at the same time.
Right.
And her husband's off, like, fucking someone else and also, like, being a dick.
But he brings the money home.
He's the breadwinner.
Bread stealer.
Bread stealer. Yeah, definitely stealing bread. Haley eventually files for divorce in March of 2005. And a few months after their divorce, they're actually still living together because I think that's pretty common. Like, even if you file for divorce, you're still in the same household.
Right.
So she was exchanging emails with Jane, who was Andrew's sister, and she wrote, "I just hate him. Do you know, last night in bed, I could actually see myself pummeling him to death and just enjoying the sensation of each and every shot."
Okie dokie. Not incriminating whatsoever.
Not incriminating at all. And this was actually what sparked the whole custody battle over the children of Robert and Nancy. Like, once Jane got this email from her, she was like, hey, I don't think this is, like, a stable place for the kids to be living in. So that's what started it. And then if you remember, the kids ended up going to Jane at the end of that year.
Mm-hmm.
So in December of 2005.
Oh, that's good. Let's get those guys
out
of there.
Yeah, definitely.
Wait, but Jane only took the Hong Kong
kids,
right?
Yeah. The three kids from Rob and Nancy, because those ones are the ones that don't have any, like, parents directly to take care of them. And so in the spring of 2006, so almost like a year later, Andrew found himself going through not only a messy divorce, he was also being heavily investigated by the government for all of the fraud charges.
GG.
And eventually he decided that he would plead guilty to those charges of fraud, which held a minimum sentence of 8 years in prison. And this was a decision. So, like, he decided that he was going to plead guilty.
Yeah.
but he hasn't gotten there just yet, so let's keep that in mind.
Okay.
He was continuing to stay in his empty house because Haley had taken the kids away and because he wasn't paying rent, you know, like the 14K rent anymore because he couldn't fucking afford it. He was basically staying there just for one last night before the movers were going to come in and like move everything away. And I don't know, he would go and live on the street or something. Who knows?
Okay.
He had a driver and sort of like a personal assistant who was Carlos Trujillo. And Carlos was one of the last people that actually saw Andrew.
Alive.
Because on April 2nd, which was literally just days before he was going to go to court to plead guilty to those charges. And, you know, he was trying to plead guilty so that he could get a reduced sentence, essentially, because he didn't want to be in prison for 8 years. Someone, and some people say that it was the movers who were coming in to clear out the house, found him in his basement, and he had been stabbed to death, and he was wearing a white t-shirt, but for some reason, the t-shirt was, like, the back of it was, like, pulled
over
up and over his head.
Okay.
And he was just, like, left like that, and he was tied up.
Ooh. Tied up, too?
And, yeah. So, quite quickly, the police decided, you know, this looks like a targeted attack.
You think?
It looked a little bit intentional. Like, he can't just, like, you know, like, yeah.
No, he totally did that to himself.
Yeah. 100%. And... But because there were obviously a lot of people who were pissed off at him because he had defrauded them, his friends, his family, all of that, and, like, creditors and lenders, they were like, fuck, we have such a long list of people who could potentially do this. And, you know, in most cases we see usually the most immediate people move up to the top of that list. So his wife, Haley, was on the top of that, and that email that I talked about really didn't help her case, you know. It's like, I can see myself pummeling him to death. And they actually had an argument the night, like a couple days before that, because she just moved out of the house a couple days before as well. So nothing was like working in her favor. But eventually they dropped the charges on her, or like dropped any suspicion, because she had a solid alibi. What that alibi was like not really clear, but people just said like, okay, she was cleared of any suspicion because she had an alibi, and I'm pretty sure it was probably just because she was with her kids at that time in like whatever other house they were staying at. And so the next person that the police put their focus on was Carlos, who was Andrew's assistant. Carlos agreed to take a polygraph test, which he failed miserably.
Oh no. I say oh no like he's like super innocent, but
yeah, he lawyered up immediately after that because he was like, well, rip me. And basically stopped talking to the police. And he later said that Andrew was likely using drugs and had a prostitute at the house the night that he died. Police also found that Carlos was using Andrew's credit card, and that him and his cousin, whose name is Leonard Trujillo, were helping Andrew launder. were helping Andrew launder money. Prosecution suspected that part of the motivation behind the murder was maybe because they were afraid what might happen to them if they like kept continuing to launder money for him, given all of the fraud charges against him. So that was maybe like a motive behind killing him. Eventually, Carlos was sentenced to 6 years in jail for attempted murder and deportation to Colombia after serving that sentence. His cousin, his cousin Leonard was sentenced to 20 years in jail for manslaughter and conspiracy to commit murder. And I found it interesting, like, the difference, because, like, 6 years in jail for attempted murder and then 20 years for the manslaughter, so I'm guessing, like, Leonard was the one who actually ended up killing him and like, you know, ending his life. But that's sort of where those charges were left off. I couldn't really find more details on the case itself, like on the trials and things like that. But that's what ended up happening. So Carlos, who was a personal assistant, and his cousin were ultimately charged of the crime. But there's also a conspiracy theory.
Oh no.
So this one is that Andrew actually set up his own murder and asked Carlos and his cousin to, like, kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of committing suicide himself, he wanted to make it look like a murder so that his children would be able to receive claims from his life insurance. Which probably is a shit ton of money, just same as, you know, with Nancy and Robert's case, where there was like $15 million of life insurance available.
Mm-hmm.
Wild rich people things. Like, let me set up my own suicide, but make it look like a murder so that my kids can get the money from my life insurance. Which is, I guess, like...
That's, like, a valid, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's going to shit anyway, right?
Like, exactly. But then, like, Carlos and Leonard have to know they're going to get fucking caught. Like, Leonard ended up with 20 years in jail just to help this guy commit suicide. And Carlos gets deported to Colombia and also served a 6-year sentence. So.
Oh, man.
It's a theory, you know, it could be, like, false as well, but it is something that people have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So just to sort of wrap this up, to talk a little bit more about what the aftermath was for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the death of Andrew, Haley continued to receive a lot of criticism and had to face the brunt of her husband's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people were fucking mad at him because he, like, stole money from them, essentially. And she was the one, and a lot of people were like, You had to have known. And it's always that thing. Like, you had to have known that your husband was doing this. You had to have known how horrible he was. And so a lot of people were... It, like, kind of went on her. Like, the anger fell on her.
Right.
Which really sucked. You know, like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And Bill Kissel, their father, basically would openly criticize her during his, like, TV interviews, which also, you know, doesn't help.
Come on, dude.
Because I think when the email came out, like, the one that she had sent, because... She was really angry at him. He was basically saying, and Bill at this point was already estranged from Andrew. Like, they didn't really have a relationship. They hadn't really talked.
Uh-huh.
But he was like, you know, I think the emails speak for themselves, basically trying to imply that Haley had something to do with his death.
Mm.
And Haley was fighting tooth and nail trying to get those insurance claims for her children. And, you know, like, if the theory of, like, him committing suicide, like, but, like, trying to set it up as a murder was to, for them to be able to get money from it, you know, she still had to fight for that money because, unfortunately, the insurance companies tried to sue her in return.
For fraud?
By saying that she knew about his activities. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to keep from having to pay out that $15 million in life insurance to her because they were like, you knew about this and you basically, like, you aided and abetted in his crimes. And she was like, excuse me, no. And not only was the insurance company trying to sue her in return, at the same time, the creditors and the lenders who had lost money to Andrew's fraudulent activities were also coming back hard and filing claims against her.
This poor woman's just trying to take care of her 5 kids.
Exactly. And it kind of sucks, too, because basically all of these, like, lawsuits and whatever that were coming back against her, there's, like, very likely outweighs the $15 million in life insurance. So essentially, like, if she lost those lawsuits, she would have to pay out more than what Andrew was even, like, giving back to them.
Right.
Like, in his life insurance claims. So, like, but a bit of, like, bright news. Uh-huh. According to the Claims Journal published in October of 2008, the jury ended up ruling in her favor. They deliberated for less than 4 hours. And they said that, you know, any claims that Haley held her husband were completely thrown out. They were like, no, you know. So she ended up getting that money.
Exactly. That's pretty short for a jury, right? Like four hours?
I think it's for something like this where it's not like a murder.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably pretty standard because think it's more so like fraud and insurance claims and dry-ish stuff. So that's where Haley is. Last that I saw and read about, she went back to work as an analyst, like a stock analyst at Merrill Lynch. So,
interesting.
You know, good for her. I couldn't find her on LinkedIn.
Is that your standard now? Like, every time you find someone, like, remotely powerful or like professional.
Or you look them up on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully she's doing better.
Yeah.
Because sounds rough. Because she was not only dealing with like the divorce already,
mm-hmm.
which also costs money because you have to like pay for a lawyer yeah. and stuff to deal with that.
Oh man, could you imagine if like they didn't get a divorce and he just happened to die?
Oh, interesting. So, I think their divorce claims weren't like officially filed.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't, they're not like actually like fully legally divorced because they, I read an article. I just didn't like include it in this case, but I was mm-hmm. reading it because they were saying how she still wanted to proceed with the divorce like proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, well, your husband's dead, so there's not really a point to it.
Right.
And there's not a lot of cases where they've seen where, like, one of the spouse has passed away. And
mid-proceedings.
Yeah. And they still, like, go through, like, and do all the paperwork. Because, like, you need his fucking signature.
True. I guess you can't consent to, like, a divorce when you're dead.
If you're dead. Yeah. Yeah. That's basically it.
It's wild. So it went unsolved, kind of? Or
they kind of solved it because Carlos and Leonard were ultimately convicted of the crime.
Right.
But obviously there's that, like, conspiracy theory.
Right.
That possibly he might have set up the whole thing himself, maybe just to avoid, I don't know, avoid That's responsibility, wild. Maybe.
That's nutty. But, I could.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Both this whole, like, part A and part B is, like, wow, rich people things.
Yeah, actually, rich people problems. Can't relate.
Wild.
Literally, wild. Cannot relate. And, like, ugh.
Yeah. Imagine having that much wealth, right? Like.
Can't.
I can't. I look at these numbers, I'm like, these are just numbers. Like, I don't, like, it's mean nothing reality.
Yeah, that's yeah. literally how I feel when I'm doing, like, my company's, like, financial yeah. reports. I'm like.
Yeah.
I'm typing one, but that means 1 million. Like,
I know.
It's crazy.
And, like, sometimes I'm in meetings and they're, like, because we do, like, proposals and things like that. Mm-hmm. And people will ask about costs. And they're like, how much will this cost? And I was like, around, like 20 grand. And they're like, okay, yeah, no, that's good.
Excuse me?
It's like people talk, it's so wild to me because people talk about 20 grand like it's $20, uh-huh, right? Like yeah. when you're in like big corporate company, big yeah. firm world, mm-hmm. and you're like,
okay. And then, oh, my favorite thing is like when they're like, I have like, I'll be like, oh yeah, there's an error here of about like, I'll be like, oh yeah, there's an error here. And then they'll be like, oh, how much is it? I'll be like, oh, it's about 30,000. And they're like, oh, that's non-material. I'm like, excuse me? Non-material
is very material.
That's
to
very
me.
Material to me.
Very material.
Oh, I wish that like there was like a fund where, you know, like rounding errors could be sent to like the poorest people in the company.
Damn, that's actually a genius idea.
Thank you. I come up with that, things sometimes.
Yeah, I love that. All the rounding errors get just like distribute
trickle
the wealth,
down.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a pay raise.
Easy. Easy money.
Easy money. And what? It's like a few million in like a multi-billion dollar company. Like, they'll be fine.
Actually wild. But that's it.
Wow.
I know this awesome. One was a little bit different, but it was yeah. also very interesting to see, you know, the fate of two brothers in the same family who...
We didn't talk about Asia like, at all this episode.
Not at all. But it was still a fun case.
Thank you so much, Leanne, for telling us about part two of the murder milkshakes.
The murder milkshakes. The milkshake murder.
The milkshake murder. I like legit did not understand why you laughed for like a good few seconds. The milkshake murders. Oh man. Okay. Well, it's been a long few days. And Leanne yeah. and I are looking forward to watching the Alberta update on the new restrictions that are coming because our fucking government can't handle their shit and we have one of the worst cases of COVID rates in North America and like globally.
Yeah.
We're not doing too hot. But yeah. hopefully, I don't know what they're going to do. Honestly, I'm not going to be surprised by anything they do, but thank you so much for listening this far and hearing us ramble and talk about stuff. And, that case that wasn't really aligned Asian. With, you know, what we usually do, but it was still very interesting, so thank you, Leanne. If you want to check out the sources that Leanne used to research this case, like the articles and the documentary that she talked about, feel free to check our show notes at bit.ly/incrimination, all lowercase, and then check out our Instagram for photos. I don't know what photos you have, but...
I have some photos of, like, the people involved, so Carlos and Bill.
Oh, yes.
And whatnot, yeah.
It'd be sick if you could get a photo of their homes.
Yes, I'll try to look for it.
But, yeah... Check us out. Thanks.
Bye!